Ryan hit the brakes.
What's the problem?
I can't run straight over someone's farm.
Ahead of the idling wag was a broad street that had been entirely given over to crops. Rows and rows of corn sprouted up out of the ground that had once been hard blacktop, but was now broken up and reclaimed by nature. To either side, ramshackle dwellings had been constructed in the ruins of the old buildings that had once been there, sheltered from the elements by the remains of what had been before.
It's kind of beautiful.
Beautiful, my ass. We hang around one place too long, we're liable to get chilled.
Yeah.
Ryan reached for the shift and moved the gears into reverse.
Eden, you know another way through?
I don't know all the routes. I just know to head north. My horse and cart could take narrower pathways than you can.
Then we can. We're in this together, remember?
Ryan turned the wheel and righted the bus, shifting back into drive and heading off to the right where they had previously gone left.
Let's see what we can find.
They crossed two intersections, passing signs of human habitation. Matching flags had been hoisted on the street lamps to left and right of one intersection, twin fluttering yellow banners in the wind. Ryan figured it as a territorial marking of some kind, turned the wheel and passed by it, advancing at a slow speed as he sought an unmarked way through. Then, without warning, they were suddenly confronted by a line of heads on stakes, unevenly running along the sidewalk to the right and left.
What the hell?
Eden leaned closer to the windshield to better see.
Mortifier territory.
What does that mean?
They trade in parts. Motors, weapons, small stuff mostly. They behead anyone who doesn't pay their debts.
Gives a whole new meaning to the term engine head. They gonna be salty about us passing through?
Not sure. They might want something. Payment.
They like bullets?
It's a standard currency.
That's what I figure too. Jack, back up top please.
Already on it.
Jack ascended the ladder and popped open the trap door, emerging in the rooftop cutout where the Gatling gun was secured. They drove on. Elsewhere, in the area known as Pigtown, where the stench of fermenting jolt hung in the air, Baron Big Pig Chop was granting an audience to two of his loyal lieutenants, Fabian and Okapi. The baronial seat was located in one of the old warehouses that had survived the bombing of Baltimore, now reclassified as a palace, the vast open space partitioned off into smaller rooms. Some of those rooms were dedicated to the production of jolt, great vats of the component parts of mescaline, heroin, and whatever else could be added to bulk out the addictive mixture, being stirred by hand. Bare-chested men and women using great stakes to swirl the bubbling goop in repurposed oil barrels. The smell of that jolt pervaded not just the palace, but the streets all around, leaving a sticky, burnt fog in the air, like the smell of caramelization. Shafts of daylight knifed down from small holes in the roof of the warehouse palace, illuminating the cavernous throne room in lines, like icicles. Dressed in sweats that barely contained his rounded belly, the obese baron sat on his boxy, blocky throne amid those icicle shafts, imbibing smoke from a hookah pipe as his sekmen sat around him. Figures stirred four more barrels, one in each corner of the room, working on the final processes of the jolt mix. It made the room stink, but the baron was used to the smell, the way it made a man's head swim, and he liked to keep an eye on the final parts of the process before the jolt got distributed onto the streets by his pigs. It paid to watch things, or someone started getting ideas about planning against you, the way Chop himself had planned against his old baron to get to his mighty position of power.
Sec Chief Diallo tells me you have news. Speak up, my grunts.
We saw something real fine.
Okapi and Fabian had used their bicycles to hurry here from the rollers' territory, using the back streets and the dirt trails to cut through the city. Okapi was shaking, still coming down off the buzz he had been rocking when Fabian told him about the wag. Baron Chop brought one hand up to his face in consideration, stroking his jaw thoughtfully. As he did so, a line of gold rings flashed in the shafts of light, one on every finger.
Real fine, you say?
Some fucker brought down the rollers. A whole lot of them were left out on the street.
Chilled?
No, but way out of it. We took what we could. See?
The man opened his backpack and a stack of stolen possessions spewed forth, including two handguns, a mask, and 8 knives of different lengths and types.
Looks like you dang brought their old armory.
Sec Chief Diallo was a tall man, bulky, with muscular arms on show, covered in tats.
Not even close. There was sticks and armor and all that good stuff. Just didn't want to outstay our welcome, if you get me.
You're scared, little grunt.
No, not scared. Smart. There were 30 rollers out there. 30 of the damn gunk balls. They were incapacitated, but they weren't going to stay that way. Okapi and me got what we could. Besides...
The corpulent baron leaned forward in his throne.
Go on.
I was casing the territory, but I was a long way out, Big Pig. I heard this thing before I saw it. A motherfucker wag was big as a house. The rollers swarmed on the thing, and I made to get out of there. But then the wag stopped, and it did something real nuclear. Thing had a blaster on top, but they didn't use that, no. They made this noise, low, like, so you feel it in your chest, like when you need to cough. I was far away, but I could still hear it, feel it. But them rollers on the street, they started to fall down because of it.
It's a weapon, then.
Either that or they're touring musicians who like to knock out their audience.
Why did you hurry to tell me this, my grunt?
Think about it, Big Pig. They used this thing, but they didn't take nothing from the bodies. They left that for us.
Like carrion.
A weapon like that? In pig hands?
Baron Chop smiled, showing teeth that had been filed down to points.
Now I see the picture. The skate park is West Pork, right?
He called it West Pork, but the old signs called it Westport. Reading was not a strong skill among the population, and good reading was a rarity.
Where was this sound wag headed?
This way. Maybe right through Pigtown.
We could lay us a trap. Bring them right into our sty.
How do you stop an enemy wielding such a weapon?
I've been thinking about that. We cover our ears. Tight.
Fabian touched the sides of his head.
Yeah. That's smart.
Sublime, Fabian. Piggin' sublime.
The pigs of Pigtown started to get organized. The Companion's wag drove through mortifier territory on the south side of Baltimore, past the lines of decapitated heads.
I don't like this.
I'd venture that not one of us is particularly comfortable. The beheading of a man is a barbarous act like unto no other.
Beheading of a woman ain't so good either.
Quite so, Mish. My statement was in the abstract, man as a general term rather than a specifically gendered one.
Means what now?
What that means?
Do you think you'd shut up if someone cut your head off? Or do you think you'd just keep on jawing? I reckon the latter.
Now really, John Barrymore, there's hardly humor to be found in such a dire situation.
Triple red, people. We have movement out there.
Outside, framed in the view slot in the windshield, Ryan watched as a vehicle was moved across the road to block it. The vehicle was an old high-sided van, and it was being dragged by 2 black horses until it effectively blocked the road. Ryan pumped his foot on the brake, easing the wag to a halt. A man in a tall black hat leapt down from the cab of the van, a vicious bladed staff in his hands.
Buy or trade?
Neither. We're just passing through.
This road is ours. We own it.
Ours or yours?
What's your point, traveler?
I'm wondering how many bullets I need to spend to get through this pest hole.
The man in the hat looked the bus up and down for a few seconds, then nodded.
A nice piece of equipment you have here. Running good, too. But everything needs parts now and then. Why make life difficult, friend?
The only difficulty I have is you, friend. Now clear the road, or I'll clear it myself.
In an instant, Top Hat moved, leaping toward the bus and lashing out with that bladed staff he carried. Ryan realized too late what the man's plan was. Take out a tire, trap them here so he and his allies could smoke them out, and deal with them at their leisure. But Jack was quicker. The man with the staff was suddenly cut apart in a blaze of blood. 5 shots was enough. The man crashed down in the street, his hat skittering from his head as he fell. At the sound of gunfire, more figures emerged from a building to their left, and Jack trained the Gatling gun on them, unleashing a stream of shots that dropped one and forced the others back into hiding.
Think we can get around it?
Let's find out.
Ryan accelerated, driving the bus toward the halted van. The horses were on a yoke and unable to get free. He drove straight for the yoke, and the horses bucked in fear as they tried to get loose. The wag struck, batting aside the front of the van as the yoke split. One horse ran while the other fell, and Ryan just kept on going. Up above, Jack swung the Gatling gun around and loosed a few shots behind them as the mortifiers launched a counterattack, pelting the rear of the bus with rocks and metal from elaborate catapults. Then they were in the next street, past the lines of poor decapitated souls, and on toward the north. Next stop, Pigtown. Ryan shot Eden a sneering look.
Is this really worth it?
Lest you forget, our journey through this little gauntlet is for my benefit.
We're a team, Doc. A family. We stick together.
Ricky's right. Why don't you remind us what it is you're hoping to discover at the end of this particular rainbow?
You of all people know the loss I have suffered. Wrenched from the tender arms of my dear sweet Emily and my two children.
What would you be doing there if you were with them?
What is it, Saturday? Then I fancy we would just be sitting down to our repast. That's dinner to you, Miss Shakur, where Emily would have spent much of the afternoon preparing the evening meal. Doubtless a cut of pork stewed in its own juices until it was tender, along with whatever vegetables are in season. Mayhap beans or sweet corn, roasted potatoes upon the side, of course. My mouth is watering at the very words.
Mine too.
And after the meal, perhaps a sweet...
A sweet? Like a place to hide from weather?
No, a tasty treat. Something in sugar or syrup. My Emily had a sweet tooth, and Rachel and Jolyon were following in her footsteps, even at their young ages.
How old were they, Doc, when you left them?
Rachel was 3. Pretty, like her mother, but with my eyes. Jolyon also took after his mother more than me, although Emily might disagree. He was just 2 years old when I was made to depart.
I'm sorry.
That is what I am missing. Time travel is a cruel mistress. A cruel mistress indeed.
At the wheel, Ryan concentrated on the road.
We'll get you home, Doc.
Eden looked at Ryan, and he glanced at her, sensing her gaze on his, and saw the frown there.
Like Ricky said back there, we're a family. We do what we can for one another.
Doc seemed so sure about what he had given up, while Ryan just felt an uncertain sense of loss that had left him rudderless ever since he had settled the ville called home, that they had ultimately been forced to abandon. Whatever the Whitecoats like Long and the people who had plucked Doc from the time stream did, maybe they had done it to Ryan too. Maybe they had lifted him from one life into another. Into this one. Pigtown got its name in the 19th century when it was host to a number of meatpacking plants and butchers serving the then city of Baltimore. At the turn of the 21st century, it had also been home to what claimed to be America's oldest Irish pub. The locals had always taken a certain pride in the name, defiantly and humorously. What it was now was home to the Pigs, a large gang who dealt in narcotics, primarily Jolt, throughout the surrounding territories. Jolt got a man high. It was also addictive, and it destroyed the body over time. The people who indulged in Jolt didn't care. That was the effect Jolt had, and it was the effect they were looking for, no longer caring. Ryan sensed the change. There was an odor in the air, a kind of discreet tang of sweetness that permeated through the bus's air filters. It was a smell like you found around a still when you were distilling alcohol, the scent of fermentation, of life being compounded under pressure. You could get high on the air out there. The locals were likely in a daze the whole time.
Cover your mouths!
Ryan pulled the white scarf he wore up over his nose and mouth. His companions did likewise, using handkerchiefs or scarves to cover their own mouths.
Jack, get the hell down here and seal that door, you hear?
Got it.
When Jack slipped down the ladder, JB and the others saw that he had already had the sense to cover his mouth and nose with a kerchief. Jack slid the trap closed, then jumped down. The next corner saw graffiti splashed across the walls in fiercely bright colors on every side. In the middle of the splashes of color, Ryan spotted a cartoonish boar's face, tusks silvered and glinting with imaginary rays of the sun. As Ryan turned back to the road from the momentary distraction of the graffiti, a sail dropped down from on high to block the road, some kind of heavy sheet covered with netting. Ryan tapped the brakes and checked the rear view, and as he did so, he saw another sail drop back there, winched on a kind of trestle system that had been set up from building to building so that it entirely covered the road. They were trapped. No way forward, no way back. They were in the middle of a two-lane street, lines of old warehouses or storage units to either side. Ryan could either push through the sail ahead into who knew what, or he could stop and become a sitting target. Figures were emerging from the buildings, armed with rifles and blades, a baseball bat here and there, one wrapped in barbed wire. They were dressed in hoods and coats, a kind of uniform, he guessed, a way to recognize other members of the gang.
I count 14 men.
More coming from behind.
And this side.
On both sides. 6. No, 8.
Fire blast. Trapped like a rat.
Ryan reached for the switch under the dash and set the dynamo charging off the idling engine.
Charging sonics. I'll count us down.
Most merciful. I shall cover my ears.
You should cover your mouth while you're at it.
You are what my dear daughter would call a sourpuss, John Barrymore.
JB just smiled and nodded, covering his ears. The dynamo drained the engine. It wasn't practical to use while they were in motion. But here, with people possibly watching from cover, the charge could fire the sonic pulse and knock out everyone in one fell swoop. Through the windshield and the side windows, Ryan and the group watched as figures moved in doorways and on rooftops. Some wore half masks over the tops of their faces, made to look like pigs. Others wore hoods and scarves that effectively covered their head entirely, disguising their faces.
They're setting us up for something.
Yeah. Something not good.
And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ryan toggled the switch that set off the sonic pulse. This trick had worked with the rollers. Ryan figured it should work with these pigtowners, too. Ryan watched the figures on the street fall back, while other men in hoods and jackets had come staggering out of the surrounding buildings, holding their hands to their heads, clearly in agony. Ryan smiled grimly. It wasn't exactly a noble way to fight, but this whole setup, this whole city, was a gauntlet of skirmishes they didn't need. That kind of action didn't just put you at risk. It wore you down until you made mistakes. Ryan made a signal with his outstretched arm and eased on the accelerator, rumbling forward just a few feet before drawing to a halt. No one moved outside.
I want to see what's behind that curtain.
Well, can't you just drive through?
Sure, and go headlong into a trap. Come on, Doc.
Ryan got out of his seat, and his companions joined him at the doors to the bus.
Jack, back up top. Mildred, stay here. And Long?
Yes?
This is your territory. You keep your eyes open and tell us what we need to know. Got it?
Got it.
JB handed Ryan his mini-Uzi, and Ryan worked the door release. Outside, the smell was stronger, even through the coverings the companions wore. Almost immediately, Ryan began to feel lightheaded. Behind him, JB had his M4000 shotgun in hand and was sweeping left and right as he scanned the street.
Let's get this done.
Ryan led the way toward the sail that had been dropped across the street before the wag, looking up to examine the ties.
JB, any idea how we remove this thing?
Now let's check what's behind it first. I figure we might have to get up in one of them buildings to unhook it.
How long does this sonic blast keep people down for?
When Arakaria used it on us, we were out for a couple hours. We have time.
Don't like it.
Me either.
The group paced on toward the hanging sail, those who had loaded weapons holding them ready, Doc relying only on his sword cane, Ricky with nothing but his wits. The sail was made from some kind of heavy canvas, stitched together to create a curtain that entirely blocked the way, 20 feet wide and almost as high. The canvas was in turn covered in loose netting that could easily get caught up in a vehicle's wheels if someone tried to drive straight through it.
Well, this isn't new. They've done this before, see?
There was enough space on either side to allow a pedestrian to pass, but no more than that. The sill covered almost the entire width of the road. JB and Doc joined Ryan to study the ties that held the sail in place. It had unfurled from some block and tackle mechanism that had been set 25 feet over the street, strung out between two of the three-story warehouses. While they checked the sail, Christy, Ricky, and Mish checked beyond it.
Look at that. Damn thing's made of metal chain links. That's gonna be bastard hard to break.
What do you suggest?
Winch it back up would be easiest, relatively.
Means going into one of the buildings.
Or mayhap both of them.
Christy, how's it looking out there? We clear?
Clear. A lot of fallen locals, but nothing else to alarm you. There's no pit and no weighted battering rams, not that we can see.
Yeah, maybe we could just drive through this after all.
And get tangled up in the sail? They thought this through. There's netting there that'll get caught in our wheels if we just try to power through.
Most elegant. Oftentimes, one must remember how simple does not always equate to primitive.
Admire the ingenuity on your own time, Doc. We need to get in and unhook it.
Ryan pointed to one of the buildings.
JB and me will take the one on the left, if you think you can handle the one on the right.
Might I remind you that I am decidedly unarmed at this moment in time?
Fire blast.
Ryan handed Doc the Uzi.
I keep forgetting how bastard low we are on ammunition right now.
Happens to the best of us.
Whether the armorer was talking about their ammo situation or Ryan's momentary memory lapse was unclear. And in the next instant, it no longer mattered. Because just then, the figures who had seemingly been felled by the sonic pulse suddenly rose en masse, leveling their weapons at Ryan and his crew. It didn't take a genius to realize that they had been had. Nor did it take a genius to realize that they were surrounded, caught dead center of two dozen blasters as the hooded locals took up positions, and the companion saw that beneath them they wore scarfs like tourniquets that entirely covered their ears.
Black dust. Bastards were ready for us.
Up top of the bus, Jack rotated the Gatling gun, only to find his own allies posed too risky a target. If he shot wildly, he might end up hitting Ryan or Doc or JB. Better to wait and see how this played out. On the far side of the canvas sail, the same thing had happened to the search group Christy led.
Are they zombies?
No, just playing possum. And they've got us in the center of the crosshairs.
As she spoke, Christy raised her hands out and up from her body, holding the Glock loosely in her right hand and pointed at the sky. Mish did the same, as did Ricky, even though he was unarmed.
That's smart.
Around him, the other members moved in to disarm Christy and Mish, while someone else relieved Ricky of his holstered Webley. On the other side of the sail, just 15 feet away, Ryan, Doc, JB, and Eden were also being disarmed. Ryan noticed that despite being organized, some of their ambushers were holding back and holding their skulls. The sonic blast had caught some of them then, just not enough to properly disable them. Not that the knowledge did them any good now, the ambush had still been successful. A tall figure with bare arms covered in tats approached them, as Ryan and his crew were disarmed.
There anyone in the wag? I see one.
Two men.
You're sore, Mr. One-Eye, but that won't do you no good. Best to just go with this and let it play out.
Fine. What do you intend to do?
The tattooed figure took a stride closer to Ryan.
You the leader here?
I am.
We're taking the wag. Tell your fella to get his dick off that blaster up there, or he'll see a bloodbath. You understand?
Yeah.
Ryan didn't take his eyes off the tattooed man.
Jack, come down. Bring Mildred. No shooting.
Yeah.
That's smart, Mr. One-Eye.
It wasn't smart, but it was practical. Ryan knew that Mildred was out of ammunition, which left only the Gatling gun and Jack's pistol. If Jack had been able to take a shot, he would have. Bluffing it out or trying for a Hail Mary against a militia like this would be suicide. Best to wait for a chance. Wait and hope. Christy, Ricky, and Mish emerged from the other side of the sail, frog marched before a group of similar-looking thugs in hoods and jackets, whose makeshift tourniquets over their ears to protect them from the sonics. Some wore pig masks.
That all of them?
Just the three, Diallo.
Three and four.
Diallo looked across to the wag where Mildred and Jack were just emerging, under the watchful gaze of armed men. Mildred handed over her empty ZKR-551 pistol, while Jack had removed his holster and presumably stashed his blaster somewhere on the wag.
And another two. Okay, let's get inside. Stink out here ain't healthy.
Ryan was led toward a warehouse building to their left, still keeping his hands up where they could be seen.
What tipped you off?
What's that, Mr. One Eye?
What tipped you off? You were obviously prepared for a weapon. It's unusual.
Oh, yeah. It is unusual, very much. But, see? The pig's got eyes right across this burg. We reach out all over, and we see things. Saw you. Figured you'd be passing through, and maybe we could snag a surprise if we moved quick enough. Figure it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Figure it did.
Under armed guard, they were taken into the tall warehouse. Inside, it was dark and dank, with a smell of brewing jolt hanging heavily in the air, permeating everything. There were dozens of bicycles propped up against the walls, old-fashioned push bikes dating to before the nuke cost, tires patched, chains replaced. A lot of people in the Deathlands sought out the old motorized wags, hoping to get around with the metal shell of protection they offered. But they overlooked how plentiful bikes were, and how they never ran out of fuel so long as the man riding them could still move and find food.
Keep moving.
Diallo shoved Ryan between the shoulder blades. They traipsed through the dark spaces where members of the pig family were stirring huge vats of jolt, fires burning underneath, steam smoking above their open canisters as the contents were refined.
Quite the operation you have going on here.
The pigs around her pushed her on through the open area where the jolt was processed. The group went through an open doorway and into the throne room of Big Pig Chop. The corpulent baron was sitting on his throne with several masked sekmen around him.
We snatched Noisy Wag. No losses, no casualties.
Oh, my grunts did me pig proud, so they did. Fabian, Okapi, you did good. Your tip paid off. And this is the crew, yeah?
It is. This is your new Baron Gunk Balls. Big Pig Chop. Get down in the dirt and thank him.
No one moved.
I don't bow to any man.
Big Pig Chop rose from his throne and waddled menacingly toward Ryan.
You're not a man no more. You're a pig now. You're all pigs. This is Pig Town, see? And either you're with us, or...
The Baron paused as he spied Christy for the first time, her red hair vibrant even in the poorly illuminated chamber.
Well, a pig loses rails of thought looking at a pretty sow like you.
He reached out to stroke Christy's cheek, but she backed away.
No, thank you.
It wasn't far to back away. She was surrounded on all sides.
Come now. Let's see what's under that little scarf of yours.
Christy saw Ryan nod very subtly, a plan forming in his mind. Slowly, with the guards watching, Christy drew the scarf down from her nose and mouth, revealing full red lips that stood out against her pale, flawless skin. As she did, she was assaulted by the stench in the room, a heady, cloying stink of fermenting alcohol mixed with something caustic. The chief pig seemed satisfied, however.
Now, that there is a face that could make a swine hot to trot. Fabian, Okapi, you did real good here. Real good.
Okapi was shaking with the jolt that was still running inside him.
Out of their shell and into hell!
And we have the shell, too. The wag, intact.
Fabian, you can drive her.
Thank you, Big Pig.
You're moving up in the world, Fabian Grunt. Out of the sty and looking up at the sky.
Still a long way up. Remember that.
The stories of how Baron Chop had become Big Pig were numerous, but the consensus was he had been the old Baron's sec chief, one Big Pig Cracklin, until the day he had killed him in his sleep. Some said Chop had slipped a knife between his predecessor's ribs. Some say he had bashed his head in with a length of board. Some even said he had melted the body down in one of the jolt canisters, watching the man boil alive as he awoke. No one knew the truth. They only knew that the old Baron's body had never been found, and that Chop had a reputation for being a ruthless swine. Fabian didn't care to rise too high. The more people wanted to slit your throat and watch you bleed to death.
Now we need mixers and runners and sekmen. No man or woman ever goes hungry in Pigtown, because we supply the rest of the morgue. So you all might be angry right now, maybe put out by what's happened, that we ruined your vacation and took your wag and your stuff. We took their stuff, right?
We have their blasters. Anything else is still on the wag. I have two men checking it and two more guarding it.
The Baron put a meaty paw on the Sec Chief's shoulder.
You're pig iron, Diallo. Through and through.
Thank you, my Baron.
The bloated Baron strode along the line of his captives. Everyone was getting a little more used to the cloying fumes of the mixing narcotic concoctions now, feeling less woozy.
The first thing that happens here is you get to taste the jolt.
What? No!
Big Pig Chop looked at her and smiled, showing the pointed teeth in his mouth.
Oh, you'll like it. It's a buzz. Change your whole way of seeing things.
The world gets real different after. You see it all. Blow your mind wide open.
Pigs have the best parties. All the highs you can reach. And plenty of willings and ables. You'll find the very best jolt here. 100% stuff. That can open up a woman like a flower.
He turned his attention to Christy.
You have a name, pretty Sal.
Christy, what's yours?
The Baron smiled his most ingratiating smile.
Baron Chop.
She smiled back.
That's nice.
The round Baron looked flattered.
Thank you.
Christy looked down the line to where Ryan stood.
Shall I tell him, Ryan?
Ryan smiled tightly, tensely wrapping the scarf between his hands.
Yeah, why not?
Tell me what?
I like to know a man's name before I chill him, Big Pig Chop.
What? You're unarmed and outnumbered.
Gaia, lend me your strength.
What is that?
The Baron and his men watched, disbelievingly, as something about Christy changed in that instant. Where she had stood before, Amazonian in stature and beauty, she now seemed almost to glow. Her hair crackling around her head like a fire halo, her green eyes glinting in the semi-darkness. In that uncanny instant, she had everyone's attention.
What? What is this?
With the focus on Christy's incredible transformation, Ryan took his chance to move. He launched the weighted scarf out like a whip until it wrapped around the Baron's neck and then tackled the man to the floor. Across the room, Jack already had his knives out, driving them into the two nearest pigs. Doc Tanner moved as well, snapping open his sword stick, drawing the 36-inch blade free from its black sheath by the lion's head handle. A pig next to him raised his blaster, but Doc's blade went clean through his torso before he could get off a single shot.
What the fuck?
Christy moved swift as lightning, knocking back the three pigs nearest to her. Gaia's power surged through her. Now the other pigs were responding. Guns were drawn and fired, but it was difficult to get a bead on anyone in all the chaos. Mish drop-kicked the figure closest to her, then leapt toward another pig. Mish grabbed the woman and swiveled her into the line of fire. Mish shoved the dying woman at the nearest pig and followed with a knee to the man's groin. Then she sunk her teeth into his nose and ripped a chunk of it away. Ricky glanced around. There were enemies everywhere, coming at him from all sides. Ricky leapt and rolled on the ground as a man made a grab for him, then watched as his attacker sunk to his knees, one of Jack's throwing knives dead center of his chest.
Thanks, Jack.
Elsewhere in the vast throne room, Mildred and JB had moved back to back. JB punched a skinny pig in the jaw.
I don't like this. Fighting bare hand ain't my style, Millie.
Behind him, Mildred ducked as her own attacker approached before driving a series of rabbit punches into his gut as he tried to get past her guard. The pig man went down.
I don't like it either, John. These hands weren't made for fighting.
I hear you. Let's say we cause some real chaos.
I'm all ears.
The armorer ran through the crowd of messing pigs, weaving past assailants as he headed for his goal. Eden Long was a scientist, not a fighter, but she still knew how to hold her own. When the pig called Otapi grabbed her from behind, wrapping her in a reverse bear hug, she sagged, letting him take all her weight so that he stumbled to retain his balance.
I got you, you feisty sow.
Eden stomped down hard with her right foot, striking Okapi just above the toes of his shoe where the foot is weakest.
Ah!
Okapi keeled over backwards, and Eaton drove another boot hard into his gut, then to his groin. As Okapi curled in on himself, Eaton moved in, threw her foot back one last time, and kicked him hard in the head. Eaton was alive with adrenaline. JB made his way across the room to where the oil drums of Jolt were being mixed, tipped over two of them before reaching the third. High on the fumes as they were, the wretches who stirred them weren't much for putting up a fight.
Okay, pigs, listen up.
The hubbub in the room momentarily dimmed before the various fights continued. JB produced the lighter Ryan had recovered from the burned-down still back in the grounds of Arakaria, and he lit the wick.
I'm blowing your shit, and I'm... Oh, fuck it. Ain't no one listening to me anyways.
With that, he touched the flame to the contents of the barrel, then kicked it hard as the contents caught light.
The thing about Jolt is it burns like a nuclear motherfucker.
For a moment, a single blue-gold flame seemed to play across the surface of that rushing liquid, dancing in the draft that cut through the warehouse. And then the flame began to expand and race across the surface of the spilled mix, and then the whole thing caught light. As the flames took hold, Ryan dropped Big Pig Chop on the floor, and the man sagged like a sack of flour. He wasn't dead, but he was close.
You know what your problem is, Big Pig? You're thick as pig shit.
If the Baron had a response, he never said it aloud. It just rattled around inside his head as he skipped through a hallucinogenic haze of semi-consciousness. The members of his gang, meanwhile, were suddenly aware of the conflagration that was raging across one side of the throne room, flames licking the walls. Diallo had been trading blows with Mish, neither of them able to get a knockout, when he saw what was happening.
Shit. What did you gunk balls do? Everyone get out. Get out.
Mish was tempted to knock the man out while he was distracted, but before she could, he turned and ran, tearing through the room toward the process rooms at a sprint. Many of the other pigs were running. It seemed there was only one way out of the warehouse palace, the same way that the companions had come in. Ryan scanned the room for his people, the fumes from the burning Jolt cloying his senses. Swiftly, he rewrapped the weighted scarf around his nose and mouth and began to do a head count. Everyone was still here, along with a number of panicked pigs. Christy was on the other side of the room, sagging against a wall as the Gaia power finally departed from her body, leaving her weak. The others were left amid the chaos.
Okay, people, let's get out while we still can. Doc, help Christy. Ricky, Eden, get to the wag and get it started.
On it.
Even outside, the air seemed heavy with the odor of burning, unrefined Jolt. Soot-colored clouds poured from the windows and doorway of the warehouse palace and up through the gaps in its roof.
We can't lose the wag. Over. Over there.
Yeah. You got a blaster?
No, the pigs took it.
Damn it. Okay, let's hope no one's on board.
Ricky led the way, while around them, Jolt heads and pigs hurried away from the burning building. The door to the wag was open, and as Ricky reached it, he saw someone sitting in the driver's seat, hands on the wheel. It was Fabian, the pig who'd been promoted by Big Pig Chop for his part in this ambush, and who had been gifted this very wag and recognition.
Hey! What are you...
Ricky leapt, caroming into Fabian, where he sat in the driver's seat of their wag. Ricky's punch shattered the lower edge of the pig mask that hid Fabian's eyes and forehead.
Get off our wag!
Fuck you!
Wedged as he was against the left wall of the bus, Fabian had the leverage to kick out hard. Jack and Mish had only just reached the door to the warehouse palace. The whole corridor had become a bottleneck, and there were flames licking the walls at the far end, smoke filling the air.
What about the others? What about Ryan and Christy and Doc?
Look around. Every man for himself.
But they're our friends.
Ryan will make it. They all will.
Jack had known them long enough to trust in their ingenuity. In the final analysis, with pig people still pouring out from the building, that was all Jack could do, trust. Then they heard the bus's horn. Jack looked in its direction and spotted a flicker of shadow in one of the slot windows of the wag. And he started to run without a moment's hesitation.
Jack?
But Jack was already gone, weaving through the disintegrating crowd. Back in the throne room, Ryan and JB were the last to leave, other than a few pigs who were sprawled amid the smoke and flames, enduring or maybe enjoying the most pervasive high they had ever achieved. As Ryan and JB reached the door, something creaked high above them. and a beam that held the ceiling aloft came crashing down, spewing a shower of sparks and sending the flames back.
New kid. We're trapped.
Cut off.
Ryan studied where the beam had fallen, looked for some way around, but there wasn't one. Around them, the floor, walls, and ceiling were all on fire. There was nowhere left to run. Jack sprinted across the street to the doors of the WAG, shoving people aside, with Mish 3 steps behind him. At the open door of the bus, Jack saw the familiar head of curly dark hair that belonged to Eden standing in the doorway.
Out of the way!
Jack grabbed Eden's arm and pulled her aside, his live body slipping past her and into the WAG. Within, Jack saw Ricky scuffling with a pig called Fabian, and it was clear that Ricky was struggling as his opponent held his head and smashed it hard against the steering wheel. There was blood on Ricky's face, streaming down from a wound on his head. Fabian looked around as Jack leapt into the bus. Jack drove left as Fabian tried to kick him. Fabian thrust Ricky aside.
Stay right there, gunkball!
Jack was on the deck midway down the aisle of the bus, a pale arm grasping beneath one of the double seats there. Bloodlust in his eyes, Fabian stomped down the aisle toward where Jack was sprawled, flipping open a flick knife.
You crazy shit's done ruined the palace, Whiteface!
Jack rolled over onto his back as Fabian reached him, and Fabian saw the dark bulk of the Colt Python he held there in his hands. It was the last thing he ever saw. Fabian fell back, head turned with the impact, and struck one of the seat backs that was behind him. The half-mask he wore was now a shattered jigsaw puzzle of pink smeared with red blood, and the expression on the face beneath was one of surprise and horror and fear, all overlaid by those cartoonish pig features, two shovel-shaped pink ears sticking out to the sides.
Left my blaster.
Jack strode back up the aisle to where Ricky lay against the steering wheel. Eden had just stepped onto the bus and pulled Ricky's floppy form.
You alive?
Eden pressed 2 fingers to his neck and felt for a pulse. After a moment, she smiled with relief and nodded.
Yes, he's alive.
When her fingers came away, they were painted red with Ricky's blood. In the still open doorway to the bus, Mish was pulling herself up by the lintel and using it to swing out, kicking away a pig who was trying to climb aboard.
Time to fuck off!
Agreed.
But what about the others? Doc and Ryan?
Oh, we gonna make a pickup.
As Mish closed the accordion doors, Jack dropped down into the driver's seat and started the engine. Unlike Fabian the pig, Jack knew how to drive a WAG. At the doors to the warehouse, Doc, Mildred, and Christy were just emerging. The crowd had thinned somewhat, a number of the pigs disappearing into other buildings or shooting away from the scene on bicycles. Christy was still weak, and she leaned heavily against Doc and Mildred as they stepped onto the street.
Over there. Man in khaki pants, tattoos down his arms.
Doc and Mildred looked up, and Mildred spotted the figure first. He wore a charcoal gray scarf over the lower part of his face now, but the tattoos gave away his identity. It was Diallo, the sect chief, and he had a torn bag in his arms, one handle hanging loosely. The bag was bulky with whatever it contained, loose items that he seemed to be struggling to balance as he stood in the middle of the cracked blacktop of the street.
Diallo, the sec man!
The scoundrel has our guns!
Yes. So what do? We can't just leave Christy out here.
Mildred shot a look behind them. The burning building was belching thick black smoke, while all around, members of the pig gang were scrambling for safety.
You are our medic. You take care of our dear Miss Roth and keep yourself safe.
Mildred looked at Doc, but the old man was already striding away toward the retreating figure of Diallo.
Where are you going?
To retrieve what is ours.
Across the street, Sec Chief Diallo was stumbling as he struggled to balance the bag of weapons he had nabbed when the fire broke out.
Damn it.
Diallo leaned down to reach for the shotgun that had fallen from the bag. Doc stood over the sec man as he fell forward.
I am usually not one who favors stabbing a man in the back, but this is hardly a usual circumstance, and nor, by my estimation, are you a man. I believe you call yourself a pig, and thus you may consider yourself aptly skewered.
Diallo watched helplessly as Doc picked up the shotgun, stashed it in the bag with the other weapons, and strode away.
I can't move.
Diallo tried to rise, but his legs didn't respond. Ryan and JB were penned in within the burning throne room. They had no idea that the rest of the building was burning, and in truth, it wouldn't have made a bit of difference. They were trapped there, walls burning and peeling away in gouts of black smoke, roof on fire and crumbling above them in hunks of wood and metal. The floor was almost entirely engulfed in flames too, only a small patch of maybe 8 square feet left that was not alight.
You know, I'll admit it, this is one plan I did not think through as much as I could have.
I've had worse.
These two men had shared too many adventures together to keep a tally on who had done what for whom. All the way back to their time together with a legendary traitor, they had watched out for each other, kept one another safe. They had been brothers in arms, and they had shared everything and put each other first more times than either could recall. Ryan was scanning the room, frantically searching for some way out, some path they had somehow overlooked before. The 8 square feet of floor had become 6 now, as the edges of the flames got closer, and the whole room stank of jolt and burning bodies.
You know, if this is it, I can't think of many better men to die beside.
Now, don't say that, Ryan. It ain't over till the last round's spent, right?
Ryan looked at his bespectacled friend.
JB, my decisions have been for shit lately. People have been dying on my watch.
JB patted Ryan on the shoulder.
Well, look at it this way. Ain't a nuke damn one of us could have done any better.
In that instant, the back wall behind where the throne had stood came tumbling down. Both men shielded themselves as flames lanced across the floor and a new pathway appeared between them. The wag had crashed through the wall, tongues of fire licking at its armored grill, a chain-link fence caught up in the front fender.
You expecting someone?
Ryan hurried forward before the fire retook the floor. As they reached the wag, the side door opened on its accordion hinge, and Ryan and JB saw Jack's ghoulish visage peering over from the driver's seat, his hand on the door's lever.
Well, you coming?
Try and stop us.
The armorer urged Ryan ahead, and the bus began to reverse, the very instant that his own foot touched the first step. Jack made a 2-point turn and aimed them toward the open space along the side of the building.
Thanks, Jack. But what made you come in the rear wall?
Only place figured for sure would be next to the throne.
My reasoning. Also, that the wall was weakened there from the inferno.
Lucky.
An educated guess.
Doc was sitting 3 seats back on the opposite side, checking his gun over. Beside him, Mildred was with Christy, the former looking bruised, but mostly okay. The latter exhausted, but otherwise fine.
Thought you were going to miss the bus?
Not today.
Elsewhere, small but deadly wars were being waged. Across a 4-lane blacktop that had been taken over by trees and weeds, a gang called the Cliffs could be seen taking up positions, using the vegetation for cover, hissing orders to one another. The Cliffs dressed in camouflage clothes, dirt on their faces, hair groomed in a way so that they all matched, kind of.
You ain't got nowhere to run! Nowhere at all!
Across the street, under the cover of an old gasometer, the educator's field leader shook his freakish head as he listened to the man's words, his eyes narrowing as he was finding it hard to keep his temper in check. He wore bright clothes in primary colors in stark contrast to the Cliff family, and his skull was bulbous around the forehead, his chin extended down to almost meet his chest, while his ears were large and protruded from the sides of his deathly pale face. There was a thin mat of hair atop his head, which he brushed one hand through as it shook.
You have nowhere to run. You should always speak properly if you want people to understand.
Educate them, Josie!
The woman with the box flicked a switch, and for a moment, nothing happened.
Gotcha.
A series of explosions rocked the street, and the Cliff men went hurtling in all directions as the ground beneath their feet was ripped away. 4 men remained of the original 10, and they panicked.
Fall back! Nuke shit! They got us cornered here!
Not cornered, you silly sillies! Corners are where 2 lines meet! You're out in the open, you motherfuckers!
A great chunk of the pavement fell away, disintegrating with a great churn of dust. A quarter mile away, Earthshaker bombs had redrawn the street plan in this part of Baltimore, close to the inner harbor. Now the street fell away, the ground concertinaing along an opening fault line where the gang had placed their explosive charges. The remaining members of the Cliff Gang tried to run, but found themselves on ground that undulated like the ocean.